Welcome to the Due Diligence Podcast, where we explore how leaders make and execute their biggest decisions, from transactions to founding organizations to career pivots and beyond. This podcast is produced by Sleeping Giant Capital. We connect executive talent and capital to invest in West Michigan businesses. To learn more, visit us at sleepinggiantcapital.com or stop by our office in downtown Kalamazoo.
Justin Murray, great to see you, buddy. Welcome to the podcast. The CEO of SignComp, former CIR in residence, or CEO in residence, CIR. We miss having you in the office. Still hold the putting record from our office, but great to see you. How are things, Justin?
Great to see you, Derek. I still have I have my own putting mat here now at the new office up in Grand Rapids. Thank you for sending it, and miss you guys as well. So it's interesting, full circle here. I think I was hosting at one point, and now I'm back as a guest. So this is exciting times. This is what we hope for.
Wait. So Justin was a CEO in residence at Sleeping Giant Capital, the very first CEO in residence at Sleeping Giant Capital under our model. You started this podcast.
Several of us worked on it, me, you, and Doug, and yeah, we had I think I hosted two or three or four of these things, and so that was always, we were able to use that studio and get guests in and learn about some other small businesses across Michigan. So I haven't done a whole lot of podcasting since, so it's fun to get back in the chair.
What was your motivation for starting the podcast back then? Because you were the driving force. I remember you went to Doug's office and you were really serious about getting it going because we had thrown the idea around a while. What was your motivation back then?
Well, I think a lot of it was trying to get our name out there. You know, with me being the first, I think there was a bit of a lack of awareness. And so we were trying to, and we were all pretty well connected within West Michigan. So we had some contacts and wanted to, you know, not only hear their story, but share a little bit of what we were trying to build. And and that way we could post something. I think we were hoping to do it every month or so and try to build more brand awareness. And now obviously that is something that is well built and you guys are off and running, and congratulations on Fund 2. And so that's probably, you know, a little bit behind you, but I think it was a lot of fun to build. And that was part of the exciting thing about being one of the, you know, being the first one through, is we were building a lot of things as we were going. And that's what made it so fun and challenging, is when you're the first. And I came from a company where we had 35,000 employees. So there was a person for, you know, everything you could imagine. There was somebody that was their job. And so coming to an office where there was three or four of us, you know, you had to do a lot of different things, and podcast became one of them. So it was a fun time back in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. And it's still going. So yep. we're today, I really want to, I talked to Justin the other day and I said, we're going to tap into all your experience. And you laughed at me like you had a ton of experience. And I said, Justin, you have the most of anybody on our team. You've been through the full circle from leaving a job with 35,000 other employees at a big Fortune 500 to coming to the residency to now being CEO of SignComp for year four.
Finish year three in March. So, you know, it's been two and a half years.
2.5 years as CEO of SignComp. So you're the full journey. And we actually have a documentary coming out on you. We were recording you while you were here. And so we have a documentary coming out soon so people can come see that. But really, let's use today to help others. That's what this podcast has always been about, to inform others of how people will make decisions and when they're doing their diligence. And really, I think your journey is going to be super helpful for people to kind of grasp and understand, and your decision points and really what you've learned so far. I'm going to try and unpack that for our listeners. So let's give a little backstory, Justin. Why did you originally choose to leave that large company and come join us at Sleeping Giant Capital? Well, get your background. I know you're you're a super competitive guy. You had a great background, MBA from State, if I remember correctly, worked at a lot of Fortune 500s. So tell me, decision to do the ETA or come to join us to buy a small business.
Yeah, and I saw your original question was why ETA, and I think when I looked at that, I started thinking about it, and I said, I never really thought about ETA. I was thinking more about it, in terms of the actual sleeping giant model, and I think for a few reasons, after reading the books, there you could do this yourself, and to me, I think doing it with a team, I think you'll, as somebody that was searching, I think you'll find that you'll have more success when you surround yourself with a team because you will challenge one another on your assumptions. You have a broader network when you have three or four other people that are along with you. Backing up, that was when you look at this in terms of there's a lot of different ways to buy a business. I prefer and think the best way is to go about it with a team of people. But backing up even before that, why was there interest? I think a few things. I think the working in a big company, there's some great things. I learned a ton, working at three really large companies. So I have nothing but good things to say about my experiences with them. But that being said, at some point you do become one of 35,000. And so there's a lot more maybe movement that you would have to do to move up the corporate ladder. So that may mean moving your family several times. There may be several different boxes that you need to check, in order to climb the ladder. And so I think at some point I had to do a little soul searching on my own to say, what would I prefer to do? And I had always had interest in doing something smaller, always had interest in running or owning a company, and just never really knew how that was going to happen until really I met you, Derek, and we started talking about the Sleeping Giant model and what you guys were trying to build. And it just seemed like a great fit for me and what I was trying to do. And I'd worked, even though I was at big companies, I had worked on a lot of M&A projects. I had worked on a lot of new product development projects. So I was familiar with building things, although it was always within the safety net of a big company. And so that drew me to this opportunity is let's build something. And then obviously have an opportunity to own something and operate something going forward. So, there are other things. I won't bore you with all the details, but just other life experiences I think that led me in this direction. But those are kind of some of the high level points.
So somebody listening that's in Fortune 500 thinking about taking the leap, what do you think from your experience in the residency and now being CEO, like what are the things they should consider before they take that leap?
Well, I
Not
think
that
number
you know
one.
now.
No, yeah, number one is that you're going to have to be comfortable rolling up your sleeves, and there's no more saying, "Well, that's not my job." I think I learned that at Sleeping Giant right away. I came in and I said, "We need to have like a one-page document that says what are you looking for? What's your background? Like, why are you an interesting person?" Because that's what every conversation I would have with a lawyer or accountant, they would say, "Can you just send me a one-page bio on what you're trying to do?" Well, we didn't have that, so we had to build that, and so that was day one. Is okay, we have to lay this thing out, and whereas at a big company, you just send it to your marketing communications department, and voila, it shows up. So, and same thing in operating a business. I've had to load trucks, had to be here on Saturdays. I mean, there's all sorts of things that you'll do and that you need to be comfortable doing and happy doing that maybe you wouldn't do at a large company where it's a little bit more, your role's a little bit more defined. So I think one thing that helped me and is that I worked in a lot of different functions. I worked in finance, marketing, procurement, M&A. I did a lot of those things. And so that's helped because you do have to have a lot of different conversations and need to know a little bit about a lot in my new position as president that maybe you didn't need to when you have more expertise throughout functions.
All right. So let's go through the entire journey step by step. Let's start with the residency program,
Okay.
and then search. What was your experience in search, and what are some mistakes we made that everybody can learn from? Challenges, high points, low points, anything that comes to memory from Probably 3 years ago when you started, right? 3 years ago when you started to
Yeah.
now.
I think a few things that I would recommend to people. Number one is a lot of times you start with, I just have to start the outreach. I have to start the outreach. And so you're maybe email blasting people and you don't really know anything about their business. And so they're probably quickly deleting anything that you're sending to them. I mean, I get them now around, hey, we're interested in buying SignComp. And you can just, it's so obvious when it's just spam versus if somebody actually crafts you a one paragraph email that says, here's what I've done. Here's why it's interesting. Here's why your business is interesting. Will you have a cup of coffee with me? So I think that's one thing we learned pretty quickly is that you need to approach this in a way that is very personal because selling a business is going to be one of the most personal things that an owner is going to do. So I would say that's certainly one of many things I learned.
Okay. Any things that you would suggest for someone that's going to join an accelerator program like ours? What would you suggest that they look for in that program? Or, because you were the first one, we had nothing, so we convinced you, Lee Stryker, to join an empty office. So, talk about anything that you think that you should make sure that they're looking for when they join one of these programs. And you could, we got thick skin, so. Anything that you want to
Right.
bash us
I
for
mean,
is good.
I think you want to make sure that I mean, I think first things first is you just have to make sure that what your North Star is the same. You want to make sure you have the same goals and ambitions as the group that you're going to join, and everybody approaches this different, right? Sleeping Giant is more place-based, and so that to me, I wanted to stay in West Michigan, and that was exciting to me. Others are more national. Others are very much more like want to attack a certain sector. Others have different time horizons that they're on. And so I think that's probably the first thing is just figuring out what do you want to do? Do you want to hold something long term? Do you want to do this 3 or 4 times and so maybe sell businesses quicker? So I think it really starts with that and just making sure that you're a match because I think once you get in, the things you'd want to be looking for are you going to have support? So and what does that look like? I mean, are they going to be finding deals for you or are you going to be responsible for that? What kind of financial resources do they have in terms of funding? What kind of advisory resources do they have in terms of coaching you through the negotiation process or able to bounce ideas off for deal modeling, things like that. So I think all those questions are worth asking. And then the final thing is, what's the financial piece of this for you in terms of, everybody's got a different equity model and you want to make sure that it's competitive. So there's a lot to think about, but I would say, it really starts with the person. And I think that's where, even going through the acquire program with you, Derek, it helps to really figure out, some of these, they seem like simple questions. It's like, hey, write down your, personal ambition statement, write down, what you're interested in. And I think sometimes those sound so simple until you actually start writing them down. You're like, man, this is harder than I thought. And you learn a lot to think about yourself. And so I'd encourage people to do that before you even, start talking to different firms. Because those are questions they're probably going to ask you. Why do you want to do this? What are you looking at? And you need to have that, elevator pitch ready to go sooner rather than later.
Yeah, very, very good. So let's go in directly to search because you said you made some key tips there, like make it as personalized as possible. The blanket emails are showing up in the thousands now because everybody gets a CRM and sends these random emails and every owner gets 100.
Yes.
From your search journey, what are some of the challenges or learnings that you had just in the search process that you think, man, this I did this wrong, or we did this wrong, as in, or I
Yeah.
advised you wrong, or Doug advised you wrong. Something that you think when people go into the search, things they should focus on and learn to do well.
Well, I think the first thing you need to think about when you get started in this is what is your approach to industry going to be? Because when I started, I thought I had worked in two industries. I had worked in consumer packaged goods for Mars Incorporated, and then I had worked in medical devices for Stryker. And so I'm like, well, hey, if I can find an opportunity in one of those two areas, that would be a great fit. But then you start thinking about the other side of it as the owner on the other side, and you would say, well, if I own a consumer goods company, do I want to sell to Justin or do I want to sell to Mars? And you'd say, I'd rather sell to Mars. And similarly with medical devices, do I want to sell it to Justin or would I rather sell it to Stryker? And the answer is pretty obvious. So I think pretty quickly for me, and this is not the same for everybody, I pretty quickly pivoted to what am I good at? What skills can I bring to a business? What have I learned that I could help grow a business? And think about it more in terms of the skills I can apply versus the industry that I will apply it to. And that's how I ended up in the sign industry is, our company, SignComp, has a fantastic brand, but I don't think we knew what the brand stood for in terms of like actually going through a brand audit and trying to think through exactly what the purpose of the brand is. So we did that. Our website was 25 years old, so we redid that. We didn't have a CRM. Our sales force was not structured in a way where it was not done by region. It was just done out of the office, and you could kind of go wherever. So those were things that I knew how to do, and we've been able to implement them and grow because of that. And that was maybe the approach that I had to, that was a mistake I think I made early, that we were able to then, change course and say, actually, let's focus it this way and look at a business that slightly differently. Now that takes a lot more time because now you have to go and look at all these companies and say, what do they do? What is the market like? And how do they approach the market in which you can grow it? So again, that's why you have to be more personal versus, hey, just blast all the medical device companies and all the consumer packaged goods companies in the state of Michigan, and we'll find one that works. It's just you've got to be more personal, and that means you're going to have to spend a lot more time going through and filtering out companies that may or may not be a fit for you.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, let's talk about that. I think we visited a lot of companies. I went on a lot of tours with you. It's been a while. I don't remember them all, but how did you come to the terms that, I think SignComp is a great fit for me relative to all the other ones. And I think this is going to be the match. Like how that's hard to do. Most people say, is this the one? Is this not the one? How did you come to that conclusion in your search? And were
That's
you
a, I
right?
mean, that's a, yeah. No, it's a good question. I mean, I think, yeah, it's a good question. I think probably the way to think about it is there's a little bit about what's the baseline of the company, and then there's how much risk are you taking to grow the company, and what's the downside risk. And I think so that's an aspect of it. There's fit and that there's risk. And I think those are the two things you have to weigh against. So I think for me, this was a great fit. And then if you looked at the risk of the company and the thesis we had for it, it's like, all right, the upside is pretty good. The downside, this has been a very stable, strong company for many years. So I think that's really how I would think about it is fit versus risk of fit. Because there are other companies where it's like, oh man, this is a great fit, but man, there was EBITDA was lower than we liked. There was a, it's an industry that was a little very much more capital intensive. So there's a lot of risk in terms of the capital cycle. So I think you have to think about these things both ways, because that will really, at the end of the day, when you step into the company, you're, yes, the fit is important and how you're going to grow it is important. But you also need to be thinking about, the overall fundamentals of that business and how strong it is, because there's some things that you can't fix.
Yeah. What about let's talk about building a relationship with the owner, deal making, and through the deal stages. I think we all learned some really key things from you. It's always hard getting first to an agreed upon deal with an owner. No different in your case. And also getting through the deal stages to close. I think probably more than anything, we learned a lot from you from a couple of the deals. But what are your suggests from once you have reached a good fit, you see a company you like, progressing to A, negotiations, then through the deal. So let's start with building the relationship, negotiations that you have, and then maybe through the deal.
So I think on the negotiation side, the first thing, and this leads to, I'll talk about this throughout the deal, but I think the first thing you want to think through is the motivation of the seller and what is important to them, because you need to then tailor the deal structure according to their motivations. So what do I mean by that? Well, there's only really a few things you can change in the deal, and that is the cash, that is the seller note, that is an earnout. Those are really the three levers that you can pull. And so you need to really understand what do they want, like what is their motivation to get out? Are they, do they need all cash? Do they want to stay on? Do they feel like this company can be, five times the size? You'll hear some of these things, and based on what you're hearing is how you should tailor your offer. And so I think that's the first thing, is you need to listen and understand where they are, where they think the company can go, and where they personally want to end up, whether that be how much longer do they want to work, or are they planning to sell and move to Florida or what have you? So you need to know that early, because that will help you with the offer and making sure that you are listening to them and hitting on the things that are most important. So that's how I would frame the negotiation phase. Once you're past negotiation, then I think it's really you don't need to be best friends with this person, but you do need to meet with them frequently and again, understand the people that are in the company. You need to understand what do they want to do? What is their family like? You need to understand where is this all going, because the last thing you want is if you haven't had those conversations and then you're 2 weeks away or 2 days away and they say, "Oh, you know what? I just talked to my wife and she's saying there's no way I can sell because I've got nothing to do," and so on and so forth. And so, you know what? I'm not going to do this. And it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with the purchase price, but it has everything to do with talking to their family and figuring out if now is the right time and if you're the right fit. And so you need to get that on the table a little bit earlier. Maybe say, "Hey, I take you and your wife out for dinner," and just, not that you have to get into all this, but you'll start to see and hear things, and then you'll see if it's if it looks like you've got a high likelihood to close, or if you've got some red flags that you need to talk through.
The influence of others on that decision, right? Of and through well, even the negotiation, like who's involved, and then to close, who's the lawyer? What's their motivation? Who's the accountant? What are they doing? Remember, they got a pretty good accountant on yours too, right? On the other side, and then the wife, the family, anybody else involved in the company. Those are really key influences that the owner may or may not disclose a lot of things to those people until they're far along, and then all of a sudden they do, and it flips the apple cart at the end, right? So I mean, and so how frequently would you think, so let's say close in 90 days, that you think you met with the seller? Do you remember?
I think we had a phone call. We did a weekly phone call. I think we just did it like Friday mornings, and a lot of times it was only 10, 15 minutes.
That was just you and the
But
seller, right? Like nobody else, because you had your weekly diligence call. We do that, and then you just had a weekly separate phone call with the owner to discuss like how are things going in diligence? Is everything good? Are you okay?
Exactly. We did that, and then we would talk through, like, once we got into definitive agreements, we would talk through things that each attorney had seen, and then we would just kind of talk through what we were willing to agree to, what his perspective was, what mine was, and then we'd come to an agreement. Probably the best example on that is, we were buying this business coming out of COVID, and so the inventory at SignComp was just starting to flow in. So there were many shortages during COVID. And so now all the product had started to show up to SignComp. And so our inventory levels were, I don't know, close to 50% above what they had been historically. And so there was a lot of conversation around, hey, from a networking capital standpoint, we spent a lot of time talking through that impact. And the seller is adamant that it's going to come down. And, luckily we were able to build trust that, we could see it, that it was going to come down, and they weren't holding old product or old stock or, stock that wasn't moving. It was purely timing, and we were able to work through that with some creative, some creative funding on how we were going to do that on the networking capital side. And it all worked out, but you need to kind of anticipate some of those things and just attack them head on. I mean, like you said, you can't wait and say like, oh, have you talked to your wife, a week before? You probably want to bring that up right away, early on, and say, oh man, what does your wife think about this? Or what does your husband think about this? And if they say, well, I have it, then you're going to know pretty quick. Okay, well, hey, can we go grab coffee? I'd love to meet him or her. Those are the types of things, that they're not going to see as pushy, but you're going to learn a lot by, you'll know a little bit better on where they are and how serious they are. And then again, that's your likelihood to close. That's what we used to call it, at Stryker.
Well, I forgot how significant that was, but you passed by that inventory thing really fast, Justin, in the deal. I mean, you kept close tabs on Jason, but I'll back up this to correct me where I'm wrong, but it was hard to get inventory during COVID. Specifically, it was a lot of aluminum in your case, and the previous owner was like, "Whenever you get it, send it to me." And then it all showed up at once, and it was the tune of a few million dollars
Yes.
of inventory that showed up weeks before we were closing. They couldn't get it, they couldn't get it, they couldn't get it. Then all of a sudden the supply chain opened up, they got it all delivered at once, and all of a sudden the owner was like, hey, there's an extra $2 to $3 million of inventory here. We got a problem, and you guys were able to work it out and come up with a creative solution together. But it wasn't insignificant. I mean, it was millions of dollars coming in a
Yes.
close of a swing, right?
Yes. Yes, it was. And I think we had awareness on the front end that it was going to happen. But yeah, it's there's always going to be that new piece of information along the way, and you just have to figure out if it's a deal breaker or not. In this case, we knew that it was active inventory that was coming in that had a purchase order against it, and that it was just ready to, it was going to come in and go out, and so it was going to be fine. But there's other businesses where you would have seen that and said, this is not okay. This is dead stock. You overbought inventory and it's not going to move, and I'm going to be on the hook for that. And so I think, you just have to dive in and just really get an understanding of what's the purpose of the inventory. I think now that COVID is, now that we're on the other side of that, I'm guessing there are fewer, odd situations like that where you're seeing some of these big blips up or down, but there's always going to be the curveball in the deal, and you just got to figure out, can you work through it? Is it a deal breaker? And then work to have a creative plan. And that's why we were doing those weekly calls to talk through things like that, just the two of us, to make sure that we saw a path. And luckily we were able to close, and honestly, from then on, that inventory did draw down, and we've been able, like, it worked out the way we communicated it. But that's why you've got to build trust on both sides.
Yeah, and sometimes there was nothing to talk about on the calls. You just checked in 10, 15 minutes. How are things? And
Yep.
no problem. Just keep going with that. And those are good calls. But yeah, you said something really good there. There's always going to be curveballs. I think there's always going to be a curveball, a knuckleball, a slider, and something else by the time you get to close, right? So I think that was one of the key learnings for you, was keep that relationship. Not best friends, right? We don't have to be best friends, but we got to have open communication and open line all the time, right? So
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you're probably going to need that person after close too, around. You can do, there may be a handoff period. If there's not a handoff period, there still may be a, hey, where is this document? We've got a lot of ongoing projects. And so there are things where, I had to call the seller and say, hey, I'm looking for the pricing that we established for this, and can you help me? So you need to have that that relationship, and it starts starts early, and it starts about talking, making it personal. I think that is a key piece, that you'll a key thread throughout this that you need to have, is that you need to build a personal relationship. You need to think about it from their shoes, and I think that will help you get through it in a way that you got your best chance for success.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's go to transition. You're walking. Oh, actually, we have your. This is going to be in the premiere, I think. You're walking in the first day. I think we actually recorded it, which you'll probably say don't have a camera right up to the first day with you. I remember you went to the bank and then you walked in. But so let's just go through a higher level. Like transition as you come in as a new CEO, what you learned, what advice you give to people, tips for the person that's walking in that first day as a acquiring a company. What would you think you learned from your transition from searcher in an accelerator like Sleeping Giant Capital to CEO?
Yeah, well, I think that's when the hard work starts, is once you step in day one. And I think during the search process, you control a lot of those things, right? You control, you're basically a single employee, right? You're just responsible for yourself and your search. And then day one, you come in, and in our case, we have about 40 employees. And so you're addressing all of those employees on day one and telling them, whatever you need to tell them. In my case, it was very positive. It was, everyone's keeping their job. We're very excited about the future. And, I really would recommend everybody to keep it pretty short, because in our case, this was not a sale that was communicated ahead of time. And so you're going to have some people that have questions, that you're going to have some people that are surprised in a good way, some that are surprised in a bad way. So I would recommend you just keep that day one presentation short. And then from then on, I met with every employee individually, and learned more about what they do at the company, and shared with them where I thought we could take the company, and tried to show them, the vision for the future. So that is your number one goal in those first 30 days, is to build trust with the team, and to share a vision that hopefully is more exciting than the vision they've been under currently, right? You want to show, hey, this is going to be good for you. It's going to be good for your career. And here's why. And so that's the first 30 days. It's a total whirlwind. I think I traveled, probably 5 out of the first 6 weeks, but I was also here part of that time trying to meet with employees. So it's a very hectic first 2 months, regardless of the situation. Even if it's, if they're like, hey, this is great, it's still, it's a lot for you to learn, making sure that you start to know all the not only employees, but the not only the employees, but also all the systems, and how payroll works, and how all these things are working on a daily, weekly basis. So that's you gotta break that up. I think we put together a first 100-day plan, and I would recommend everybody to do that, and then manage to that plan, and make sure that you're diligent about going through it.
And you guys serve food too, right? First day, if I remember correctly. Did
It was an
you?
all company meeting that
All
was
company.
pre-planned. Yeah, so I think there was
You and the
food
previous
before
owner
that.
worked on this pretty
Yeah.
closely, right? You guys planned this
Yep.
together. How we're going to do this. Here's the communication. There's an all
Yes.
company meeting. This is the day we'll close on that meeting. And then we'll tell everybody at that meeting. That was kind of how that went, if I
That's
remember.
correct. That is correct. Yep.
And did you hand out cards or tell everybody, take the weekend and come see me with questions? Is that something like that? There's something unique you
Yeah.
did too.
Yes, we did. Yep, we did. We did that. I think I did. I wrote a note, I think, to every employee, told them, why I was excited, and then yeah, I think gave everybody a week and said, write down your questions, and then we'll cover that in a meeting one-on-one. That was helpful. And I mean, we've retained, it's close to 100% of all of our employees since then, and we've grown since then. And I think you just have to approach the whole situation with humility, and say, yes, like, I'm excited about the future. Here's what I can bring to the table. Here's what I want to do. But you also have to recognize, in our case, we have, I think, 16 of our 40 About our 40 employees, about 16 of them had 10 years or more experience with the company. So, to think that you can come in day one and know more about this business than they do is not the case. So you need to, share your vision, but also be humble enough to learn from them and make sure that it all works together.
So let's go to two more questions. Surprises in running a business as CEO that you never thought of, or something that's super unique or different or.
I think the big surprise is probably just in this role, you control, the cadence of the company, the speed of the company. And I think that's something that, especially when you have a lot of ideas in your head about where you want to take the company, it's easy to roll that all out at once and say, hey, these are all the things we're going to do. And I think it gets people excited, but then it also can get them pretty nervous to say, man, how are we going to do all that? We still only have 40 employees. How are you planning to hire another 20 here in the next couple of days to get all this work done? So I think you just have to, that was a bit of a surprise and a reminder for me, is that you do control the cadence and the speed, and you have to make sure that you are putting your vision out with that cadence, that says, here's what we're going to do in the next 6 months. Then here's what we're going to do in the next year. And you're going to, yes, you're going to build towards a bigger vision, but you've really got to, you've got to put some methodology around that and making sure that you're not going too fast, because all of a sudden, you'll find good employees that are feeling like they're getting burnt out. And then, once you're, yes, you want to move fast, but then you also need to have some patience to make sure that these investments actually have some time to sort themselves out. So these are things that I've learned, I think, because I have a lot of ideas and I want to move fast, and so those are things that I just need to remind myself of. I think, Matt on our board was telling me, he's like, hey, just remember that growth, revenue growth is a lagging indicator of all the things you're doing. And I think it's easy in my chair to look at that revenue number and go, okay, is it up or down? Like, that is the scorecard. And you got to remember, everything that you're doing behind the scenes takes time to build and takes time for customers to see it and engage with it until then it actually turns into revenue. So there's a lot of things there, I guess, as a surprise, is just you just really have to think through that cadence, speed, and having some patience there.
Yeah. So, and you said something I'm going to circle back on. You were traveled 5 of the first 6 weeks. You still actively travel. I think I call you a bunch of times. You're like, I'm in Green Bay. I'm in, Dallas. I'm in Orlando. Why are you traveling so much? Or why, at least initially?
Yeah, well, to start, to me, it's important to understand your customers and to really, hear it from them on how you're doing and how you're performing. It's also important to me to see how our sales force sells things and to understand their approach and see, is this a consultative sale? Is this like what how do we show up to customers? So that's really most of the travel, is seeing different shop, seeing different size sign shops, seeing different markets. We sell a lot through distribution, so how do different distributors look? So to me, you can obviously listen and learn from your team, but there's also an aspect of you got to get out there and actually see it for yourself. And I think that's helped me learn, how we can be better here. It's helped me learn, what we do well, and then also where we can make some improvements.
Okay. Yeah.
So I've been trying to tone back the travel. I don't travel as much now, but I still think it's an important part of, I think the CEO of the company should be the most, outward facing voice. And so, people need to see you. They need to know that, that customer service and customers are, the most important part of the overall, SignCon business. And so that's really why I do it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go for a couple tips here. How do you think an individual that is never owned and operated a small business for should prepare? What are some things they should do?
Well, I think I would just tell you to learn a little about a lot. That's why I was mentioning that my, working in different functions has really helped me. So I would encourage people that if you're not ready to make the jump, like at least make the jump maybe to a different function or something within your current, say you're 5 years away from trying to buy a business, then I would encourage you to at least, try to change functions or industries, because you will need to learn that skill on how to adapt and learn quickly. So I would say, that's one thing. And I think number two is you just need to, write down at the end of the day, like this is a sales pitch to the owner. So you need to write down why you are a good fit to buy this business. And then you need to read that and say, okay, if I'm on the other side, would I look at this and go, wow, this person is very qualified, very motivated, and very interesting. And so, yes, I want to take that call. Or are you saying, yeah, like this is not the guy that or gal that, is ready. And so I think you need to have a real conversation with yourself around what do you want to do, and are you actually ready for something like this? Because it is not easy. It's a totally different perspective. You need to, you need to be able to zoom in and zoom out a lot. You cannot be just a specialist. I was just the other day, we had our 401k provider in here. We had our health insurance provider. And so I was doing those two things. And then right after it, I met with our, operations vice president in our shop, supervisor, and we went through the shop org chart and what that needs to look like. So I did all that within 2 hours. So those are things that you just need to make sure that you feel comfortable, working your brain and in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of stuff you have to do, right? It is pretty amazing, but also I'm guessing super motivating, right? That's why you did this.
Extremely motivated and super fun. I mean, I love that's like you can see from my different experiences. Like I've always loved new challenges and learning new things, and so that's what makes this great is you learn something new every day. You get involved in a lot of different things, and you start to know, you start to learn more about functions that maybe you didn't even know more didn't know anything about, So it's been a great learning experience, and hopefully, I've been able to use some of my skills to bring into our business and teach some things along the way too.
Yeah, well, you're performing well, so that's exciting to see. And you just said something 2 minutes ago that's like my new favorite line. It's a reverse sale. I don't remember what to call it, not a reverse sale, but when people ask me, "Am I good for acquire?" I always say, "It's not up to me. It's up to the seller that you're going to convince them to buy the business, and you are selling them. Even though you're giving them a pile of money, you have to sell them that you're the solution for them. Or they're not going to take your call." And it's weird because you're buying something for them, but you actually have to sell that. So it's this weird, you have to sell them and then you have to give them money, right? Like it's the reverse customer relationship. It's this weird dynamic, but they're the decision maker if you're the person to buy their business, if you're their succession solution. And you have to sell them on that, and then you have to give them money. You have to convince them to take your money, which is a hard thing to do, right?
Exactly. And then you have got to get in there and actually prove that what you're saying is going to happen. That's so there's it's hard. I mean, that's the thing. I wouldn't change this for anything. It's been a blast. It's been really fun. It's been really engaging. It's been, a lot of learning. But it's not like it's easy. There in no point of this is easy. Starting with, should I quit my job and do this? That's really like, that's not an easy choice, and there are several other hard choices along the way, but like I said, I wouldn't trade this for anything.
Yeah, should I quit my job and do this? Yeah, like be buttoned up before you do that. Know why you're doing it. Know what you're going to look for. But it's always that is the first risk. You may not buy a business. You may not end up doing it, right? It may be a fail. There's a lot of searches that fail.
Yeah, and I think, I meant to say this earlier, and I think you also need to have whoever is in your support network. You need to make sure that they feel like it's a good fit for you, and that so for me, for instance, I've got my wife Alana. We've been married 15 years, and then we have two boys who are 10 and 6. And so, at the time, this was a couple of years ago, so they had been, I don't know, 8 and 4. You got two young kids, and the wife, and my wife was staying, she was staying home. And so, that was a big decision around, should I do this? I'm considering this. And I don't know why she was saying this, but she was like, you should absolutely do that. That would be great for you. That sounds like you. And so she was very like on the front end of encouraging me to do this. And you need to make sure you have that support, because it is not easy, to, there are a lot of tough days ahead. And so you need to have a partner or a support network that's gonna encourage you and be like, hey, you can do this. I know you can, and I know you'd enjoy it. And so that's another, conversation to have at home. You're asking, other things for searchers, but like, you can usually tell, like, obviously my wife knew something that was like, that she was like, you should do this. You've been talking about this. Just you do it. You'll love it. And so I would encourage people to seek that feedback from people in their network to see if others think that this would be a good role, good route for them.
Yeah, it's not stress-free. Everyone takes that part of acquire seriously when I say go interview your spouse and make sure that you get your feedback on this. And they're like, yeah, no, I got that. Don't worry. Yeah, no, to take that conversation seriously. Take them out to dinner, right? So spouses, get them to take you out to dinner and have a nice dinner and talk about what you're planning. And it's not going to happen over one conversation, right? This was great, Justin. Any other tips you think I'm going to start a search, or I'm becoming a CEO, that you think are imperative that you should share with listeners, either bucket, being a CEO for the first time, and or you're planning to leave corporate America and do a search full time.
I think just the last thing would just be the networking piece of all this. And I think, that's another reason why I think Sleeping Giant was good for me, is the networking component here. Like, I've gotten able to meet people that Derek, that Doug knows, and vice versa. And I try to do, two coffees every month with either another CEO that's in Grand Rapids, or someone that I feel like I can learn from. And I think having that network, you need that throughout the entire process. So early on, there was a lot of meetings with bankers, lawyers, attorneys, accountants, all these folks that have relationships with sellers. And so, you need to build those relationships early on. Then those usually go through the deal and then after the deal. So, you need to build that network of professionals. And I think you need that, from the start of the search all the way to once you even own the business. Because once you're running a business, it is kind of a lonely seat to sit in. There's only so many people that you can talk to about certain things. And so having that network post acquisition is important, so that way you feel like you can ask questions and get some support there that you're not always having to pay for.
Yeah, you're not always having to pay for is a good one. Really good. That's a good idea, that the two coffees a month from, having a network and support, both, very personal and professional. This is not a stress-free journey. The books make it seem way easier than it actually is in the end, right? I mean, these
It all
books
starts
that
with books and slides, and it ends with, people and hard work, seems like. So,
Yeah, so here's a good idea, and everyone makes it seem way easier than it is, but that's why these accelerators are, I hope, are successful, and we play a role. All right, Justin, let's do some rapid fire. I don't want to go too far, so we always do rapid fire. I think the first time we did rapid fire, when I ask you, we always ask what's your favorite sound. You were actually going to try and make a sound, but so these questions, some of
I
them.
don't know. Well, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how I do.
I added some. So, favorite business book.
So I put, I think there's a book called Rework by Jason Fried, and it's really good. It's about, it's like in very plain language, and it's all about execution. It's really good.
Favorite podcast. I'm gonna add one. You got any podcasts you
Ooh.
listen to, or favorite ones?
I would say probably the All In podcast
Ah,
cast is my favorite.
it's It's still a good weekly one. And they're releasing the live ones from the show that are good listens to right
Yeah,
now as
that's
well.
probably, I mean, I do listen to that every week. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Favorite leader.
So on this one, I'm gonna go. I was thinking I love sports, but I'm not gonna go sports. So I put Alexander Hamilton. My oldest son just did a biography on him. He had to dress up as him last year at school. So I learned a lot about Hamilton, and he's a pretty interesting character. So I'll put him down as his favorite leader, old school historical figure.
Old school plays on them, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, this is a new one too. Your journey from corporate America to searcher to CEO. If you had one word for that journey, what would it be?
Manifest.
Manifest. Now you're sounding like my partner, Doug. Manifest.
Yeah,
Yeah, empower. Like you're responsible for it. You can manifest. You can make it happen, right?
you
Yeah.
can make it happen. Yep, absolutely. I think that's the key. That you gotta have a goal, have a big idea, and try to knock it down. So there's a lot of Doug and I would talk about that a lot. You gotta manifest it into happening.
Yeah. So now when I post this on LinkedIn, I'm just gonna put one big hashtag manifest and then an exclamation mark. Okay. What animal represents your leadership style, Justin?
Oh, so
There's
this
one
one I've
animal.
got. So I just got to go with I've got to go with lion because of the Detroit Lions, and
Oh.
it's now on to football season, so that's I'm so excited about the future there. But that's he's
Everyone.
also Dan Campbell's been. There's actually a great article on him recently about talking about day one speeches and things like that. There's a great article about the speech that he gave on his first day and how that really it was. It was a surprising speech for everybody that knows it, and but it really accelerated the change in the culture that they needed. So that would be, I'm going to go Lion, but people should read that article. It's really good.
Yeah, I think Lion good, go Lions, obviously, but the fit, I think that's a great example of like you have to find a company that fits who you are. You said your skills, what you can apply, how you can help a company grow. Does this match for me? Like Dan Campbell in Detroit, like he is Detroit's face, and like that is such a good fit for him.
Yes.
So it just makes sense, right? Like you kind of feel this is the company, it makes sense. You got a lot of marketing and branding in your thing, but it's also a lot of work you need to do that you could apply your skills to. So yeah, really, really good. If there was a sound, I just wasn't on my list. If there's a sound, or what's your favorite sound or a sound that represents Justin? I got to go back and listen to the old podcast, see if you give the same
I
sound. I
think
forget what you said before.
well, we love going to Mackinac Island. So I think the horses at night, the clip-clop of the horses on a really quiet night, that's
I
I
think
think
you
like
said that last time.
I think I probably did.
Yeah.
That's probably one since I was a little kid that and I think a lot of what we talked about what like hard work, stressful, all these things. And so that's having some time like that with your family where it's just nice and peaceful is important.
Yeah. I still haven't made it there. I gotta go. Execution or ideas, Justin, after learning all this, what you only get one.
Well, from in my new job, it's ideas, and then but the execution's critically important. But I right now it's been for me it's about dreaming, and then it's about reinventing things here. So I'm gonna go with ideas for now, although knowing execution is also important.
Courage or compassion, Justin?
Courage.
Courage. Okay. All right, fair enough. Hey, Justin, thank you so much. CEO of SignComp, first actual searcher with Sleeping Giant Capital, been at the CEO helm for almost 3 years now. I have the privilege of serving on your board. I have the privilege of watching you along this journey. It's been so inspiring. We got a movie premiere coming out, or a Justin documentary that was done 3 years ago. I don't know what's taken Doug so long to get this thing out, but yeah, final thoughts from Justin Murray, one of the first. We'll always have that recognition. Final thoughts for listeners, besides for Go Lions.
Final thought would just be, There are plenty of opportunities to do that. If you want this to be your path, you can make it happen. Like we said, you can manifest it into making it happen. But I would just say, do the right preparations, make sure it's for you, and make sure you really know what you want to do, because you're going to get those questions quickly, and it's the better answer you can provide, the better off you will be. So, I think just doing that early, the early work will help in the long term.
Doing the early work will help in the long term, in the preparation. Make sure you're prepared. Good advice, Justin. Hey, thank you so much for joining us, Justin. This was awesome. Much appreciated. A lot of good tips in here for our listeners. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to give us an hour and help, educate everyone. Appreciate you, Justin.
Absolutely. Great to see you.